Hello and welcome to this AAT podcast on motivation when working alone. My name is Tracy Sinclair and I'm a corporate executive coach and management development consultant. I have been working with the AAT staff, branch network and members for the last 13 years. During the course of this recording, there may be an opportunity for you to complete an exercise for yourself, or to take a little time for thinking. Please feel free, therefore, to pause the recording at any relevant point for this purpose. During the course of this recording, we will cover the following areas. We will look at three patterns: problem or outcome focus, towards or away from approaches, and our relationship with and approach to time. Have you ever driven somewhere and then when you arrived, you thought to yourself, do you know what? I can't actually remember getting here. So much of what we do, think and feel is unconscious. It is said that we are creatures of habit, and this is because our brain likes routines and patterns. We get bombarded by thousands upon thousands of pieces of information every single day, and we need to organise all of this information in some way, otherwise we would become totally overwhelmed. One of the ways in which we do this is to filter the information so that we delete what we don't want or need and then file or process the rest in some way that is meaningful to us. These unconscious methods and patterns of sorting information are extremely influential because they affect what we notice, how we form internal perspectives, how we draw conclusions from our experiences, and ultimately, what we then choose to do about those experiences. It is this constant processing and mental routine building which drives our attitudes, thoughts, emotions, and behaviours. All of these unconscious patterns have a range or an axis, and there are many points on the scale. We share some patterns with others, although the combination used by any one person is unique to them. There is no right or wrong way, but your own way of combining patterns will have its strengths and also its limitations for you. This podcast is about sharing three of those patterns with you and showing how you might make some adjustments so that you can play to your strengths and become more effective, particularly when it comes to getting and keeping yourself motivated when working on your own. The first pattern is about what you focus on, problems or outcomes. In Western cultures, we seem to have developed a strong alignment to problem solving over the last couple of decades. Very often, we look at what isn't working, and by doing so, we perhaps unwittingly encourage others to do the same. Our focus in this direction can also lead to an obsession with getting to the root of the problem, which inevitably leads to the finger of blame, getting ready to point somewhere. Curiously, people and organisations who tend to think in this way are less likely to model excellence in their field. And not only does this engender lethargy, criticism and cynicism, but it also contributes to the significant fall in the practice of benchmarking in businesses over recent years. Motivation, especially when you are working on your own, implies the presence of a compelling outcome or goal. In this case, not only are you moving away from the problem, but you also have a clear sense of where you want to be heading and what you are moving towards. It is this sense of outcome focus and towards that holds the secret to a successful goal or objective, and the key to it is in the language that you use to describe it. Getting this language right creates enthusiasm, energy, and motivation. Consider, therefore, the difference between these two approaches. The problem approach would ask questions like this. What is the problem? How long has it been there? Whose fault is it and who is to blame? What is the worst experience of this problem and how can it be solved? The outcome frame, however, asks questions like, what outcome do I want? How will I know when I've got it? What else will improve when I've got it? What resources do I already have that will help me achieve this outcome? What is something similar that I did succeed in doing previously? And what is the first step towards this? Notice how different your experience is in answering these questions, depending upon which frame of reference you use, the problem frame or the outcome frame. Imagine how it would be if you approached your work from this outcome stance. So, if you concluded that an outcome frame or perspective was perhaps preferable, how might we proceed from here? Well, we take the desired outcome and we form, shape, and articulate it in a specific and positive way. We do this by asking ourselves some questions. Why not have a go and see what comes? Ah, and a little tip before you start. It helps if you can be totally honest with yourself. Think about a situation or a task that you have to work on where you need to be motivated when working on your own, and then consider these questions. What do you want? What will that do for you? State a date by which you expect to achieve this goal. How will you know that you are succeeding? How will you know when you've got it? What will you be seeing? What will you be hearing? What will you be feeling? What will I see you doing when you've achieved it? What will I hear you saying when you've achieved it? Can you start and maintain this outcome? When, where, and with whom do you want it? When, where, and with whom do you not want it? How long do you want this outcome for? What resources and skills do you already have that will help move you towards this goal? And what are the wider consequences of achieving the goal? Who else could be affected? What will you need to give up in order to achieve it? What else could happen when you achieve it? What do you get out of your current behaviour and way of working that you would wish to preserve? What will it cost you to get it? And is the cost worth it to you? What will it cost you if you don't get it? Is it worth the time to you? And is this outcome in keeping with who you are and what you want to be and what you want to do? It is worthwhile taking a moment to look at question 12, which is what you get out of your current way of working that you wish to preserve. It is this question that leads us to the fact that doing something to achieve our stated goal may imply an element of change on our part. All of our behaviour is purposeful, even though at times what we are doing may seem unwanted, negative, or even self-destructive. So, if you want to change a particular behaviour, then you need to understand its greater function and purpose. It must have something going for it, some payoff or benefit. Otherwise, you simply wouldn't be doing things that way. The secret to changing and progressing with ease is to incorporate the positive byproducts of what you do now into the changes you wish to make in the way you work. This applies both personally and organisationally. Failing to understand or incorporate the positive byproducts threatens something that up until now has kind of worked, and this leads to resistance. Therefore, to achieve long-lasting motivation, it is important to know what you already have and then to know what you want from now on. The second pattern is called moving away from or moving towards. Some people are spurred into action by the need to avoid an unpleasant or undesired situation, i.e., moving away from. Others are motivated by things that they are attracted to, want or desire, i.e., moving towards. So here's an example. Why did you get out of bed this morning? Was it because you were looking forward to your day? Or was it because you would rather have stayed there but wanted to avoid the aggravation of being late? Knowing which element of this pattern motivates you is the key to understanding some of your choices and decisions. Now let's look at this in the context of your work. Are you motivated to do your work because it is something that you want to do and see personal value in? Or is it because you want to avoid the consequences of not doing it? This will have an immense impact, not only on your attitudes and feelings and the type of experience you have, but it will also heavily influence how and when you do it. Planned and rewarding, or last minute and resented. Although there is no right or wrong here, it is worth noting that typically those people who are using a towards strategy in life actually tend to be more successful and in fact more happy and fulfilled than those who operate only from an away from perspective. Interestingly, there is something else to factor in here. And that is a concept of what I call Google brain. Imagine that your brain is a computer and that you have your very own Google, which is your vast database of information. If you Google your brain to search for "don't want to be late," it will look for everything associated with late. On the other hand, if you Google your brain to search for "want to succeed," it will look for everything associated with succeed. Your brain is your most faithful servant and will do whatever it can to help you. But you have to be clear with it and give it good instructions. Language, even that which goes on inside our own heads, is very important. Hence the saying, be careful what you wish for. So, when it comes to your working day and motivating yourself to work alone, what do you wish for? Now that you know how this pattern works, just notice how you currently use it. Don't be judgmental or beat yourself up about it. Just be curious, and if you find yourself feeling uncomfortable in some way, it may well be because you are thinking or focusing on something that you don't want, i.e., an away from. If that happens, Just notice it and then shift your mind over towards what you want instead. So we have been looking at how our mind works in a routine way to help us make decisions, form opinions, and take actions, etc., and how this can affect our motivation when working alone. Now let's look at how this applies to time. Time management is a commonly used term, and we are surrounded by courses and seminars aimed at helping us improve how we manage our time. And yet, time management is a fallacy. How can we manage time? Time just is. We all have, regardless of who we are and what we do, 168 hours every week, no more, no less. That time will pass, whatever we choose to do during it. And so the key here is to realise that what we need is self-management. Effective self-management is what enables us to make the best use of the time available to us. And we can all achieve this because our self is the one thing we do actually have control over. If we are going to make improvements in the way we work, we need to understand ourselves and how we currently work and identify what we want to change about our habits, routines, and attitudes. Then we can take control and plan how we spend our time in a more effective and satisfying way. Your only real barrier to managing your time is you. That is, if you are reluctant to change and take control. Personal management style. This questionnaire is designed to reveal your personal style for using your time. Listen to the following statements that I'm about to read to you and note the score that best reflects what you do. The more honest you are, the more accurate the responses will be. And remember, there are no right or wrong answers. For each of the statements, I would like you to score either A, B, C, or D. A means, yes, I agree, this is completely characteristic of me and I always do this. B is, yes, I agree, this is somewhat characteristic of me and I sometimes do this. C is, no, I disagree, this is quite uncharacteristic of me and I seldom do this. D is, no, I disagree, this is completely uncharacteristic of me and I never do this. So score A, B, C or D for these statements. I assess my work continuously and allocate priorities. I arrange my work into A, B, C, and D categories. I do the urgent and important category A tasks first. I know my best time for getting things done and do my A items at that time. I prepare a list each day itemising what I have to do. I set limits for starting and completing tasks and I stick to them. I have a weekly and a monthly to-do list as well as a daily one. I group together similar types of work, for example, phone calls, emails, printing, etc. I divert my calls during important discussions or meetings. I avoid taking work home with me. I rarely complete all the tasks on my list. I do my routine work, such as replying to correspondence or making phone calls, whenever I feel like it. My desk is disorganized. I jump from one task to another. I am reluctant to delegate or pass tasks to anyone else. I am plagued by interruptions. I do the things I enjoy first and delay doing the work I dislike. I find it hard to say no to tasks even when I'm really busy. I will often work right through without a break. And when I leave my desk, I don't tell anyone where I'm going. In terms of scoring, for questions 1 to 10, give the following scores. 4 points for A, 3 points for B, 2 points for C, and 1 point for D. For questions 11 to 20, give the following scores. 4 points for D, 3 points for C, 2 points for B, and 1 point for A. Now consider your scores. For a score between 60 and 80, this would indicate that you manage yourself well. You are a well-organized person who knows that good working habits get more done and can reduce your stress. For a score of 40 to 59, there is an indication that there is some room for improvement. The way you organize your work may sometimes create problems for you and others, though these are probably more irritating than catastrophic. Greater self-discipline might improve your effectiveness. Look back at some of those individual and specific scores and identify areas where you might make some adjustments or changes. With a score of 39 or less, it could be that you are wasting some of your time by not organising yourself and others, and it's possible that this could be jeopardising your efficiency and your effectiveness, and most importantly, your motivation, given that you are working on your own. In completing the above exercise, you will now have a greater sense of what you are getting as a result of how you are currently managing yourself and making use of your time. You may or may not be satisfied with the result. Either way, there is probably an opportunity for you to make some adjustments to how you are operating in order to leverage a better outcome for yourself. In order to do this, it is helpful to understand a little bit more about how and why you are getting your current result. It is known that we each have different types of relationships and connections with time. Old sayings in our language, such as "she lives in the past" or "he lives for the moment," point to those different relationships and connections. These relationships are highly complex and individualistic. However, there are two distinct perspectives on time that we tend to gravitate towards. These are called working from either a through-time perspective or an in-time perspective. People who use a through-time perspective are often very aware of the passing of time, and they view time as continuous and uninterrupted. They judge their relationships and what they have done by the amount of time spent on them and by whether the value gained was worth the investment of time. They will stick rigidly to appointment times and are able to judge fairly accurately what time of day it is, even without a clock. They often review what they have done and check they have remembered everything. They also look ahead to be sure they are prepared for whatever is coming. although they have excellent planning skills, they often find their attention wandering in meetings and during conversations, so that they miss what is going on in the moment, possibly because they are thinking about what they need or want to do next. People who use an in-time perspective get caught up in the now and are not troubled by lateness or missed deadlines. This enables them to stay entirely focused on what they are doing for long periods, and they rarely become distracted by the ticking of the clock. There is some strength in this. However, not noticing the passing of time often means they don't plan and find themselves rushing to appointments and frequently arriving late. In-timers tend to have difficulty with strict deadlines and prioritising tasks because this limits their options. They like to be spontaneous and flexible, preferring to take things as they come and adapting to life and work as they go. This can make them appear undependable, but it isn't necessarily the case. It will come as no surprise that in-timers and through-timers can sometimes clash. The in-timers tend to view the through-timers as overly controlled by their schedule and nitpicking, whereas through-timers view the in-timers as having no respect for being on time and somewhat chaotic in their working habits. Both of these approaches have their strengths and their limitations. Through-timers. The strengths here are that they are very aware of the duration of time. They have a clear view of how the past interacts with the future. Good planning and timekeeping, and they respond well to process. Limitations, however, of this approach is that there is a tendency to dissociate from events, leading to a sense of detachment or coldness. And in hectic situations, they may be unable to focus on the task at hand for long enough. In-timers, on the other hand, have strengths associated with being able to work well in ambiguous situations and focus well on a specific task for some time. They will respond well usually to people as they can give their undivided attention for longer periods. In-timers are spontaneous, therefore responding well to the here and now. Limitations for in-timers can also be poor planning and timekeeping, not always learning from the past, and perhaps not always fully considering the consequences of their actions. Let's consider the question then. Is it better to be an in-timer or a through-timer, particularly when you're working on your own? From a planning and tracking perspective, being a through-timer is very useful. However, in terms of building relationships and staying focused on the work at hand, in-timers are better. The reality is that you need to be able to use the skills associated with both orientations. And, as we have discovered before, developing range and flexibility in how we work is a great skill and resource to us in many ways. Think about how you currently operate in terms of working alone, through time or in time. Consider the benefits and limitations associated with your current approach, given the result it usually gets you, and how satisfied you are with that result and your experience along the way. If you want a different experience or result, you will need to change your strategy. What adjustments can you make to your strategy so that it works better for you and your work, and that it becomes more enjoyable, fulfilling, and motivating? This concludes the podcast on motivation when working alone. I do hope you have found this useful, and thank you very much for listening.